Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today's first article appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 13th of August. The title of this article is Wage Growth Slows for Low-Paid Workers, and it was written for the journal by Justin Lehart. Something remarkable happened in the years immediately preceding and especially following the pandemic. Wages for poor workers began rising much faster than they did for the rich. That era may have now come to a close, or at least a temporary halt. And with worries about the health of the job market these days, heightened following the disappointing July jobs report, it may as well have ended altogether. Wage growth for low-income workers looks now to have significantly deteriorated in recent months, while wage growth for their higher-income counterparts has held up much better. It is a shift that could matter not just for low-paid workers, but also for the overall economy. The jobs report released at the start of this month was revealing. It showed that average earnings for leisure and hospitality workers at $22.83 per hour were up 3.5% from a year earlier. Meanwhile, average hourly earnings for workers in the information sector were up 5.4% to $52.61. It is a far cry from, for example, December 2021. Back then, earnings for workers in leisure and hospitality, the lowest paying of the broad sectors tracked by the Labor Department, were up 14%. Earnings in the high-paying information sector were up less than 3%. The years from the early 1980s through much of the 2000s were characterized by widening range inequality, but around 2015, the gap between low and higher income workers' pay began to narrow. It was a change that economists believe was driven in part by a sharp drop in the unemployment rate that made it harder to fill low-paying jobs. In February of 2020, the unemployment rate was at 3.5%, its lowest level since the late 1960s. The dynamic was amplified by the pandemic. Businesses swiftly laid off a number of workers, including low-wage employees at retail stores, hotels, and restaurants. But then those same businesses reopened and were desperate for workers once again, allowing many people in low-wage jobs to level up to better pay. A dishwasher at one restaurant, for example, could easily switch to a dishwashing job in another restaurant that was paying an additional dollar per hour. The effects were large. A wage tracker developed by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, using data that underlies the Labor Department's employment report, showed that annual wage growth for the median worker at the bottom quarter by income had shot up to 7.5% in November of 2022. That compared with 4.8% for the median worker in the top quarter. Not all low-wage workers, though, benefited. Wage growth among older people who were less likely to switch jobs was not as strong. Inflation, of course, took a bite. But in aggregate, an analysis of Labor Department data conducted by economists David Autour, Arindrajit Dub, and Annie McGrew found that real or inflational adjusted wages for those at the bottom rose relative to those at the top. That does not appear to be the case anymore, though. As of July, wage growth at the bottom quarter was 3.7%, according to the Atlanta Fed, around the lowest since 2017. For the top quarter, it was 4.7%. A Bank of America Institute analysis of B of A customer data tells a similar story. It shows that after-tax wages and salaries for households at the bottom third by income were up 1.6% this June from a year earlier versus 2 9/10% for households in the top third. As recently as December, the B of A data showed wage growth for lower income households was outpacing high income wage growth. A cooler labor market probably has something to do with the recent slowdown in wage growth for low-income workers. The unemployment rate, which got down to 3 4/10% in April of 2023, has since risen to 4 2/10%. But the current labor market environment, where employers have been reluctant to fire but also reluctant to hire, puts many power workers in particular at a disadvantage. That is probably because they are more likely to work jobs where turnover is frequent, often because employment is highly seasonal, such as hotels, restaurants, and retail. The best way that workers are able to get wage increases is to switch jobs, and you're not seeing that as much, said Elise Gould, who is an economist at the Economic Policy Institute. According to the Atlanta Fed, wage growth for people who have recently switched jobs came to 4.3% in July, the same as for people who stayed put. But this year, the last time wage growth for job switchers was not higher than for stayers was October 2010. Poorer workers' spending behavior appears to be changing too. In June, the three-month moving average of B of A credit and bank card spending by households in the bottom third by income was 0.2% below the year earlier level. That compared with a 0.7% gain for households in the middle and a gain of 1.2% for households in the top third. That ties directly in with what we're seeing with wage growth, said Liz Everett Crisberg, who is head of the Bank of America Institute. Uncertainty over President Trump's trade policies might have contributed to some businesses' reluctance to bring on new employees. So any clarity on trade might help wage growth for workers at the lower end. That said, though, the pace of hiring was already extremely low before Trump came to office. Moreover, if the recent weakness of the job market persists, it could be low-income workers who are typically at much higher risk of getting laid off who are the hardest hit. If wage growth for lower-income households does continue to be constrained, that could affect the overall spending outlook. That is because even though poorer people spend far less than their better-off counterparts, they have far more at most needs, and as a result, they tend to spend more of each additional dollar that they get. More fundamentally, widening wage inequality can make it harder for the poor to move on up the income ladder. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the Wall Street Journal the 19th of July. The title of this is Smaller Cities Lure New Grads. This article was written by Ray Smith and Haley Zimmerman. Memo to Job Hunting College Grads. It pays to take your search to cities just beyond the U.S.'s biggest metropolitan areas. In one of the toughest markets for entry-level jobs in years, several second-tier cities, including Raleigh, North Carolina, rise above the pack for their strong hiring, their decent salaries, and their affordability. Instead of Atlanta or Chicago, consider Birmingham, Alabama, or Milwaukee, or think Baltimore in place of Washington, D.C. These alternative cities, along with Austin, Texas, rank at the top five most promising locations to find work for recent college graduates, according to a new study by payroll services provider ADP. Researchers crunched public cost of living data and ADP payroll data for more than 5 million U.S. workers in their 20s to rank 55 metro areas on three metrics: affordability, wages, and hiring activity. They then weighed hiring rates for jobs that typically require a degree against affordability-adjusted wages in each city to devise a single overall ranking. What sets the top-ranking cities apart? Raleigh, Baltimore, and Austin, all of which scored in last year's top 5-2, tend to have a higher-than-usual concentration of technology, health, and financial firms, said Ben Halliwell, ADP Research's Director of People Analytics. Like Birmingham, they are home to research and healthcare institutions that do a lot of hiring themselves. Milwaukee's top market, meanwhile, is benefiting from the expansion of Eli Lilly and other companies in that area. All of those factors are bright spots in an otherwise difficult job market for 20-somethings. Though the national unemployment rate hovers around 4%, it was 7.3% in June for recent college graduates. Many of them are running into a bottleneck in entry-level openings as employers slow hiring and few older workers are switching jobs. It doesn't help either that more companies are relying on artificial intelligence to do some of the grunt work that new graduates often do. There's a lot more great people than there are great jobs out there, said Susan De La Vega, a senior vice president at global consulting firm Korn and Ferry. Those challenges have fueled a lot of fluctuation in local job markets. Atlanta and Charlotte, North Carolina, both in last year's top five for young graduates, dropped considerably in this year's rankings. Portland, Oregon, Hartford, Connecticut, Riverside, California, and Salt Lake City all ranked toward the bottom because of slower hiring rates and lower real wages once cost of living was factored in. So where the jobs are? Raleigh once again topped the list of cities with the most promising prospects for recent graduates. As part of the research triangle, its economy is fueled by an ecosystem of research institutions, including the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Duke University, and other schools, plus science and technology companies. We have seen this stream of office projects over the last 18 months, and North Carolina State University and some of our private colleges are all supplying this great pipeline of workers, says Kyle Touchstone, who is Director of Raleigh Economic Development. Red Hat and Cisco Systems are just two companies with Raleigh operations that have stepped up with their recruiting of young professionals. The Research Triangle area accounted for nearly a third of Cisco's overall university hiring, second only to Silicon Valley over the past four fiscal years, said Scott McGuckin, who is Vice President of Talent Acquisition. Jordan Young, who graduated from Bowdoin College in Maine in 2024, said he knew just one person who lived in Raleigh before moving there for an associate job at Fidelity last year. I knew I wanted to explore a new city, said Young, who grew up in Maryland. He was pleasantly surprised by how Raleigh stacked up against New York, Chicago, and the other bigger cities his peers were flocking to. It is more affordable and it offers an active social scene and easy access to hiking in state parks, he says. Milwaukee, which ranked second, is benefiting from investment from a number of major companies in that area, as well as a burgeoning startup scene. In December, Eli Lilly announced a $3 billion manufacturing expansion in nearby Kenosha County that will include 750 highly skilled jobs. Northwestern Mutual and Milwaukee Tool also have recently expanded their footprints in the area. The city's affordability compared with Chicago is a draw for both young professionals and for companies looking to hire, according to the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. Not the Wire. Northwestern Mutual has long-standing partnerships with Marquette University and the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee to tap students for potential jobs. The insurance and wealth management firm also works with nonprofits to help recruit promising limited-income college students we might not otherwise know, said Kelly Culler, who is the company's chief people officer. Baltimore officials, too, are trying to play up their city's appeal to younger professionals. In March, the Greater Baltimore Committee launched a campaign to promote the metropolitan area's affordability compared with cities like Philadelphia and its dining scene, its parks, and its museums. Among employers, Morgan Stanley Cities cites the area's higher education programs and talent market as reasons why the bank's Baltimore office has grown into one of its largest in North America outside of New York. Baltimore was not on Marquisa Graham's radar before she graduated from Florida A&M in Tallahassee in 2021. What little she knew about the city came mostly from watching The Wire and the show's exploration of Baltimore's criminal drug trade. But after applying to jobs around the country, she landed a job there that fall as a software engineer at Lockheed Martin. She was impressed by the friendliness of the people and how walkable the city is. I was like, this is nothing like The Wire at all, she said. Austin, on the other hand, has been a destination for college-educated 20-somethings for years now. Hiring remains strong because of the expansion of semiconductors, clean technology, artificial intelligence, and other technology industries, according to Austin's Chamber of Commerce. Though housing costs remain an issue there, rents have declined nearly 3% from last year, and the city council has committed to building more affordable housing, said Eric Hale, who is director of education and workforce policy at the Austin Chamber of Commerce. Birmingham is also winning over young professionals. Companies in healthcare, finance, and technology are big employers there, as is the University of Alabama at Birmingham and its medical center. Aaron Gill, 22, originally planned to return to Atlanta, his hometown, once he earned his computer science degree from Samford University in Homewood, Alabama. But after graduating in May, he landed a job in Birmingham as a junior quality assurance analyst at Vulcan Materials, which is a supplier of gravel, asphalt, and other construction materials. Birmingham's slower pace took some getting used to, he says, but he has come to appreciate living in a smaller, less congested city. And he also has noticed a lot of out-of-state license plates in his company parking lot, which suggests to him that more young people, professionals, are also moving there for work. More and more I can see myself living in Birmingham for the long term, he said. The next article that I would like to read for you is about retirement, and it appeared in the Arizona Republic on the 10th of August. Safety net shortfall. Confidence sinks lower about the solvency of Social Security, surveys are telling us. This article was written for USA Today by Daniel DeVise. A higher percentage of Americans are saying they are worrying about Social Security, and the Trump administration may be partly to blame here. In an AARP survey released on July 22nd, only 36% of Americans voiced confidence in the future of the retirement trust fund. This was down from 43% in 2020. Another July survey from the nonprofit Alliance for Lifetime Income found that 58% of older Americans fear Social Security cuts because of recent news about potential changes to the program. These fears are not new, but I do think they are growing, said Jean Chatsky, who is an education fellow with the Alliance's Retirement Income Institute and CEO of Her Money. Fears of Social Security shortfall have loomed for decades. Lately, though, the agency's fiscal plight seems to be getting worse. New federal projections released in June show the combined Social Security trust funds will run short in 2034. That date is 1 year earlier than the Social Security Administration reported a year ago. The Old Age and Survivors Insurance Trust Fund, which pays benefits to retirees and their families, is fully funded only until 2033. And I think that's close enough in the viewfinder for even older people to think, "Holy moly, what's going to happen to me?" Chatsky said. Americans, young and old, worry about Social Security. Younger Americans tend to worry more about Social Security than do older Americans. In the new AARP survey, 25% of people ages 18 to 49 voiced confidence in the program's future, compared with 48% of those aged 50 and older. AARP, formerly known as the American Association of Retired Persons, is a powerful interest group for older Americans. The new report from the Alliance for Lifetime Income is striking because it shows heightened Social Security fears among older Americans. The industry group enlisted IPSOS, Ipsos, to conduct a nationally representative survey of 3,502 adults ages 45 to 75. Among the findings, one-third of older Americans said that they are thinking of claiming Social Security earlier than planned in light of recent news. 52% of older consumers said they are less confident in Social Security now than they were 5 years ago. Only 6% are more confident. And 30% of retirement-age working adults ages 61 to 65 said they are thinking of postponing retirement because of the current political and economic environment. Trump and DOGE cuts have disrupted Social Security. Social Security has been in the headlines all year now, and not just because of the coming shortfall. The Trump administration has thrown the agency into upheaval with a cascade of staff cuts, rule changes, website outages, and leadership shuffles amid sweeping federal spending changes recommended by the Department of Government Efficiency, which was led for about 4 months by billionaire Elon Musk. Both Trump and Musk sowed doubt in the integrity of the venerable benefits program. In a March speech before Congress, President Trump spoke of shocking levels of incompetence and probable fraud in Social Security. Around the same time, Musk told podcaster Joe Rogan that Social Security was the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. Taken together, the events seemed to shake public confidence. New benefit claims were up by more than 15% in March, compared with the same month a year ago. Fear-mongering has driven people to claim benefits earlier because they're afraid they're not going to claim benefits at all, said Leland Dudick, who is acting Social Security Commissioner at the time, in a March public meeting. Some Social Security watchdogs say the Trump administration has eroded public faith in the program. "I think there has really been a sea change since January 20th, said Nancy Altman, who is president of Social Security Works, a nonprofit dedicated to protecting and expanding Social Security. "I've been working on this for half a century now, and I've never seen this kind of chaos and undoing of the administration of the program." The notion that Social Security faces a shortfall suffuses the national conversation about retirement. Older Americans wonder if their monthly paychecks will go down rather than up during their golden years. Many younger Americans have doubled down on retirement savings, partly for fear that Social Security is not going to fully support them. What we find is, whenever Social Security is in the headlines, it strikes fear and anxiety into the hearts of so many, especially those who rely so heavily on Social Security, said Ramsey Alwyn, CEO of the nonprofit National Council on Aging. Faith in the future of Social Security hinges partly on political party. The new AARP survey found that Republicans were more likely than Democrats to express confidence in the program's future by a margin of 44% to 32%. During the Obama administration, by contrast, AARP found that Democrats voiced more faith in Social Security at that time than did Republicans. Social Security administrators, for their part, have sometimes blamed the news media for stirring up public doubt about the agency's stability. In March, they took the unusual step of posting a news release to contradict media reports about the closure of Social Security field offices. AARP issues a rare rebuke of Social Security administrators. But not all reports of Social Security instability have come from the news media. In February, AARP issued a rare public rebuke of the agency. AARP is hearing from thousands of older Americans confused and concerned about their Social Security payments, the status of Social Security field offices, and inexcusably long wait lines on the phone to get their questions answered, said Nancy Liamond, who is AARP Executive Vice President. In March, AARP members peppered Congress with 2 million messages and calls about their Social Security concerns. AARP leaders touched on that nerve in a July 22nd news conference about the new survey released to coincide with Social Security's 90th anniversary. We cannot afford for politicians to play games with the future of Social Security, said Maichia Minter Jordan, who is CEO of AARP, and we will fight as hard and as long as we need to ensure that Social Security remains the economic bedrock of retirement for generations to come. This brings us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin and I'm a volunteer reader. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.